Before I got introduced to Llewellyn, I met a couple of Llewellyn students. And I don't know if this is true or not, if this is a dream that I'm completely making up, which is fine. But they told me that Llewellyn had this vision that if you could get teachers of different spiritual traditions into a room together, something exponentially changes in the collective. And so I heard this dream of Llewellyn's over a year ago, and you know, I've been really sitting with that of here we have this incredible opportunity. We have a couple of hundred people in this room, and one of the principles I'll be sharing with you this morning, or inspiring you to keep working with, is the spiritual work that we do does make a difference in the world, and it's where we all have power right now to create changes on the spiritual levels. And the system that I've been working with is shamanism. And in shamanism, we have the ability to go into altered states of consciousness and to connect with helping compassionate spirits who can really give us guidance about what's happening in the world right now and what spiritual practices we can really embrace and engage in our own lives to create a new dream. Shamans believe we're dreaming the wrong dream, and it's definitely time to change that dream. So I was journeying a while back, and in shamanic journeying, when you go to the spirits, you can go backwards in time or forwards in time because you're outside of time. And I was journeying to a descendant way into the future, hundreds and hundreds of years into the future, when everything got worked out. Things were good. And there is hope. And she said to me, she gave me a beautiful metaphor that I'd like for us to start our work with this morning and to think about. And she said, imagine a hand. And one of your fingers drops off the hand, your hand onto the ground and thinks it can have an independent life without the rest of your body. She said, that's an absolutely preposterous idea, isn't it? And I said, yes. And she said, that's what's happening in your time now. You have all these fingers running around the world. Thinking that they have a completely separate life, forgetting that they're connected to a living organism. So I thought that we just start to, before I talk about the work that I've been doing and practices that I would like to inspire you to bring into your life, I thought that we just kind of start with a little bit of work to bring our fingers back into that one organism again. And to manifest Llewellyn's dream, which we're manifesting right at this moment, to bring our energies together. Everybody in this room comes from different spiritual traditions, different spiritual philosophies, and how we can bring back that sense of oneness of who we are, really are, which is pure light, that ripples throughout the entire web of life. What we do here this morning, even if it's a minute of work, ripples through the entire web of life. Every single change in consciousness that we make changes the whole entire web of life. So I'd like for us to start with just doing some breathing. Just close your eyes, do some breathing. And I'd like for you to imagine yourself moving the energy out of your head down into your heart, breathing through your heart. If you don't know what breathing through your heart means, put your hands on your heart. Make sure that your heart is moving with your breath. Just breathe into your heart. All mystics around the world for thousands of years have been teaching us that it's only love that heals. Method techniques, words have no meaning without love. It's the love, it's the energy behind all that is that creates magic and healing in the universe. So we move our energy into our hearts with our breath so that we do bring magic back into our lives and into this room, which is already here right now. And from a shamanic point of view, there are helping compassionate spirits in the invisible worlds who are always with us, whether we know it or not. They're always with us, helping us, guiding us. Guiding us to a higher evolution of consciousness. And so with your eyes closed, as you continue to breathe through your heart, I'm going to use my rattle and some whistling. And with our hearts, let's give thanks to those spiritual beings in the invisible realms who are in this room right now with us, creating this magical space, creating a space of love that will ripple through the web of life right now, affecting humans, every animal, plant, trees, rocks, all of life. So we give thanks to their presence. And now, continuing breathing through your heart, trying to maintain the same state of consciousness that you're in right now, I'd like to ask all of you to stand up. We talk about body, mind, and spirit. We're so much more than our bodies. We're so much more than our minds, our thoughts, our past experiences. We are spirit. And that spiritual essence that we are is what Llewellyn referred to of the spark of light. We are spiritual light. So with your breath, continuing to breathe through your heart, I'd like for you to imagine that which keeps you separate from Source, your divinity, light, melt away. Imagine your body melting away, your bones melting away, your thoughts, your past experiences, let them melt away. Let the gentle rain outside carry them away. And as you breathe, breathe deep inside into that source, your light, your spiritual light. You are divine. You are perfect as you are right now. You are light. And that light, that spark of light, connects with all the sparks of light in this room right now. We connect through our breath, through that light of oneness. And from that light, and from that place of oneness, and from that place of divinity, where we're all connected deeply into the universe, there is a song, there is a sound, there is a hum in the universe. And as we can sing that song together and connect our lights together, the light bridges of the inner worlds grow so much stronger, bringing light to dispel dark places inside of ourselves and all around the planet. So with your breath, I'd like you to continue to go inside to that place of no separation, to place of divinity, source, light. And from that place, allow yourself with your hands open so the energy moves through to tone the song of the universe. Just allow that sound to come out, connecting, bringing love and light to all the realms of the world. Connection to the web of life. Feel that vibration moving, changing from just how we've come together this morning. Feel it. Know in every cell of your being the changes, the ripples, the love that spreads throughout that web. And when you feel ready, You can sit down. Feel good? So, I'm one of those really hopeful people. I'm an incredible optimist. I do believe that we can change the dream that's happening right now. And one of my students sent me a tape that he created for meditation, and he asked me to listen to it. So I listened to it, and I went into this really deep meditation, and I had a really interesting experience and an interesting journey. And I was shown about the organism that we're all part of and evolution of consciousness and what's really happening right now. And the organism that we've been part of, how the DNA has been structured and the seed that's been planted in our DNA has been for survival of the fittest. And so when you're coming from a principle of survival of the fittest, and also that procreation and keeping the species alive is what is important to the organism, that's what we've been living with for, I'm not real good with time, but we've been living with that for a really long period of time. And that's where evolution has been. Procreation, survival is what's important. But what I was shown in this meditation was that the organism is shifting into a different evolution where love, not procreation, but love and cooperation of spirit is that next evolution of consciousness, where we're not trying so much for survival of our own lives, but joining our energies together in cooperation. So I was shown that the new kids coming in are already programmed with that DNA. And, you know, when you look at the babies being born today and that light in them, it's really incredible. But here's us. And so in this meditation, I was shown that, I don't work well with computers. If I turn a computer on and it comes on, I'm always like amazed. But I was given a metaphor out of computer languaging that we all need a new download, that our software needs to be upgraded in order, if we're going to survive this coming evolution where love and cooperation is what's more important over procreation and survival of this species. And another message that I got in some of my journeys was that the stories that the children of the future are going to read are not about one hero or one heroine saving the world, but how communities of people gather together all around the world to create change. So we're really in a wonderful time of being in a place where, as Llewellyn was saying, it's not that it was up to certain initiates to be able to tap into that deep spiritual knowledge. It's up to every one of us. We cannot give that responsibility to another person. I work with the Egyptian goddess Isis in a lot of my journeys, and she's really tough love teacher. And she's always saying to me, pull up your socks. and it really is time for all of us to pull up our socks and get going, because we keep talking about things need to change. But who's going to do it? We're going to do it. So I've been working with certain principles and trying certain things out about how we can all bring spiritual practices into our life to create change right now. And so there are certain principles that I think are really important in our work and a good place to start from. As I started out saying, the spiritual work that we do does make a difference. And it's really important for us to realize that that is where we all have power right now. So in times where we feel powerlessness about what our government is doing or what's happening in the world, the spiritual practices that we do create change. And all spiritual traditions have been teaching for thousands of years that everything manifests in the spiritual before it manifests in the physical. So, you know, if we can start really bringing that dream into the spiritual realms and doing our spiritual work, it does manifest in the physical worlds, and it really does make a difference. A principle that I've been working with and have actually been doing scientific experiments to test this one out, and I'll share a little bit about that with you this morning, is it's who we become that changes the world, not what we do. And so what we're seeing in the outer world right now is our own inner chaos. It's our own inner pollution. And the world is just reflecting that back to us. If we can work, if we could do that old alchemy work of working within and through that dense darkness inside, then the outer world will reflect that light back to us again. So that's another principle that we have to work with. And also, our perception creates our reality. That's a big one. If you want to change your reality, change your perception. I had a real big teaching about that just a few months ago. I teach in Europe a couple of times a year. And I was leaving for Europe when Hurricane Wilma was starting to come into... I knew that Hurricane Wilma was going to be moving into Florida. And both of my parents, who I absolutely adore, they're both 91 years old, are in Florida, and we're in the path of the hurricane. And so, you know, I get over to Europe, and, you know, I'm reading the papers every day, what's happening. And for whatever reason, I don't understand, the media squashed what actually happened during Hurricane Wilma. So I'm going along teaching, thinking my parents are fine, and... I heard that there were some power outages, but they've been in Florida for 20 years, so power outages weren't new. I knew that everything was just going to be fine. And I was just getting ready to do this big fire ceremony with a group, and I get a phone call from somebody who I work with in Santa Fe. She got trapped down in Florida with her parents, and she said, "You have no idea how bad things are down here. You have no idea how bad things are down here." And all of a sudden, I freaked out. I don't know what happened to my parents. So, you know, I do the fire ceremony. I get through. I'm fine. My students were kind of wondering. I was looking a little weird, but I got through the fire ceremony. I went back to my room. I just got hysterical. I was on the floor. I was on my knees. I was praying. I was banging on the floor. And my imagination went to those dark, dark places of, you know, what I imagined was happening with my parents. Ruth, my assistant and friend who was trapped in Florida, was talking about how people couldn't get food, people couldn't get water, 4 days, no food, no water. So, you know, you can imagine where my mind, when you really let yourself get into that shadow state. And it took about 24 hours for me to find out that my parents were really okay. And actually, they were doing fine, and that they were being taken care of. And then I left Switzerland, and I was going to Amsterdam, and I was sitting on the plane. And you know how when you've been in a really fragile state, everything affects you? And I had been seeing newspapers and seeing the news and, you know, everything that was happening in the world. And I was sitting on the airplane, and I closed my eyes, and I saw this dark tunnel, and I realized that I was getting ready to really move into a very dark place of depression, where I had been at times of my life. But there didn't seem to be a way out. The only way out was going to be through. And I knew I would get through that tunnel, but I knew it was going to be long. And I knew it was going to be very dark, and it wasn't going to be a fun time. And I'm just getting ready to move into this tunnel, and I hear a voice say to me, you do have a different choice. And I said, okay, tell me about it. And at the same time, I'm talking to this businessman sitting next to me about his four kids and how he's missing them dressing up for Halloween. You know how you can be in all these realities at the same time. This plane ride was the most magical experience. And what the voice said to me is, you're projecting so much suffering onto the world right now. And just like with your parents, you had projected that they had no food, they had no water, they were crying, they were scared, and they were actually fine. What are you projecting onto everybody in the world right now? If the world is simply a projection, change your projection. Stop projecting so much suffering. I burst into tears. The guy sitting next to me, he doesn't know what's going on. You know, he couldn't figure out why I was so touched about his four kids and Halloween. I was so happy I wasn't going to go into years of depression. But, you know, it was a really strong message for me because I've been around people. I've had the opportunity to work with people who have been through unbelievable abuse. And there's such a light in them and such a joy in them. And is it that we put this projection onto people? And does that start also to create a world dream? And what this voice was saying to me is, can we actually look at people who are suffering right now and see their light, see their divinity, see their strength, that this is what they came into the world for, is to work this through. And instead of robbing them of their power, because whenever we pity anybody, you know, we steal their soul, we rob their power. Can we really be sending a lot of energy and changing that world dream when we can look at every single person, no matter what they're going through, and see their absolute divinity and see their absolute light? So working with what we're projecting, and that's not easy to do because our hearts get pulled, you know, by what we see in the world. And I know many of us are really pulled by what we see with children. But if we can really see that light, if we can see that divinity, and if we can see that we're all in this together and that we're all facets of the creative forces of the universe and we all have that power to create a dream, that really is a spiritual practice that we can bring into our lives that can really help to change things, I think, on a very, very big level. And so, you know, that goes back to our perception creates our reality. I was at a workshop this summer, and I was teaching about using spiritual light for healing. And a woman came up to me, and she told me a really great story. She was online at the bathroom, and you know how women's rooms in the U.S., you can learn a whole lot about a person standing online at the women's room. And she was standing next to a woman, and of course I can't remember what country she had come from, but it was an Asian country where her whole entire family had been killed. When she came from a family where they were pretty far up in the government, and when there was a changeover in government, the whole family had been killed, and everybody who was left alive had to leave in the middle of the night with just the clothes they had on their back, no money, no anything. And so days are going by, they're in hiding, days are going by, and they have no food. And they come across some dirty rice, and they didn't see it as dirty rice, they saw it as food, and they ate it, and nobody got ill. And then they realized that they hadn't had water in days, and they were so thirsty. So they came to a river that had dead bodies floating through the whole river. but they didn't see dead bodies. They saw water, and they were thirsty, and they drank the water, and nobody got sick. And, you know, this is all in line at the ladies' room. And she said that this woman told this story not from please pity me or this is an awful thing that happened, but how grateful her family was that when they needed food, there was food, and it nurtured them. And when they needed water, there was water, and it nurtured them. And nobody got sick from what we would, in our perception, see as poisonous. So there really is a great learning in how when we can see the beauty in all things and the light in all things, it nurtures us. If we walk around the world seeing ourselves living in a toxic environment, we are in a toxic environment and being poisoned by that. So our perception really does change our reality. And another principle that I find is really important to work with is finding meaning in life. In our culture, part of what's happening with the American dream and why we're in the place that we're in is that we forgot about what brings meaning. We don't live a life of passion anymore. And life without meaning equals despair. So you're basically seeing people who are really depressed. There's no meaning. So sure, you show people shiny objects or other objects out there because there's no inner meaning. They're going to go for that. And I was doing a soul retrieval once for a woman who was dying of AIDS. And it was a really dramatic healing. And for those of you who are not familiar with shamanic work and soul retrieval, which is a major healing practice in shamanism, it's believed that when we suffer an emotional or physical trauma, that a piece of our essence, a piece of our vitality, escapes our body in order to survive the experience. So think about if you're going to be in a head-on car collision, the very last place you want to be at the point of impact is in your body because your psyche couldn't endure that kind of pain. So our psyche has this brilliant self-protect mechanism. We go away while the trauma is occurring. But from a shamanic point of view, typically that essence doesn't come back without somebody helping you bring that essence back to your physical body again. So I was doing a soul retrieval for this woman who was dying of AIDS. And the thing that I knew about her before I went into my journey for her, my shamanic work for her, was that she had had three life-threatening experiences in her life already. And the spirit showed me, and I'm not real visual in my journeys, I'm more clairaudient, and I feel things in my body, but the spirit showed me a cartoon image to show me what was happening in her life, and it was a big teaching about passion. They showed me, she was 3 years old on a tricycle. She was just looking like this, no affect on her face at all. And the cartoon that they showed me was, do you remember those old cartoons where the houses were singing and rocking and smiling? And the sun was out and had that big smile on its face and the rays were coming down. And all the cars had little faces and they were all singing and the birds were out singing. The houses, everything was singing and very, very, very bright colors. And here was my client just tricycling like this. So what my spirit said to me is that the cause of her illness was apathy and that the cure for her illness was passion. And that her lesson in this lifetime, because she had had three life-threatening illnesses, was what happens when another life form in your body has more passion to live than you do, takes over. And my client, she did die a few months later. And, you know, it was really interesting because when I brought back that soul part to her and I told her the story, she told me she couldn't keep the soul part. So I knew that she had made a decision. She couldn't accept that back into her life. But I felt that she left me with an incredible message to bring out into the world, because when we look at the viruses, the bacteria, what's going on health-wise in the world today, you know, they're a lot more intelligent than we are. I mean, they're moving through those antibiotics. I mean, you know, everything is becoming resistant to those antibiotics. But I think it's because they have so much passion for life. We don't have passion. We don't want to live. It's like Llewellyn said, we haven't said yes. Not only yes to oneness, we haven't said yes to life. And these other beings have. And they're thriving. And we're, you know, getting lost in the fray here. So finding what's meaningful. And I know in our culture, we were trained in school to be factory workers, how to behave at certain bells. And we were taught, nobody ever said these words to you, but we got the message that if you shine too bright, you're going to get into trouble. Keep your light down, just behave, and you'll get through. So we have a culture, we talk about changing the dream, but we have a culture that's lost in survival instead of thriving. And we've forgotten the joy, the magic of life. And so, you know, that's a really important place to start. And I can say that in all my years of working with clients, my biggest challenge is helping them find out what would bring meaning into their life again. You know, when I talk about how do you want to use your creative energy, the very first words out of their mouth are, I don't know how to draw. Or I can't dance. You know, we have this definition about creativity. And, of course, most of us were taught as kids that there's only a few creative geniuses in the world and it's not you. So, you know, we already got that message going. So, you know, here we are. We're talking about changing the dream. And it's up to all of us to change the dream. So we all have to honor that we are a facet of the Creator. We all express that creativity in a different way, as just as the facets of a diamond. There's different ways to shine and different colors. But we all do have that potential to really make a difference. And it is a time for us to work in cooperation. It is a time for us to bring all of our energies together. It is a time for us to shine our light in the world and to remember that it's all about cooperation, oneness, unity. There's only one light, and we're a facet of that light in the world. So I got my start in shamanism formally in 1980. Halloween of 1980 was when I took my first workshop on shamanic journeying. But I was always a spiritual kid, and growing up in Brooklyn, I gave my poor parents a really hard time because I started talking about things about oneness and light and all of that at a very young age. And, you know, they were an immigrant family from Russia and couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And had three near-death experiences in my life. And my first one was when I was 7 years old and hit by lightning in my house in Brooklyn, of all places. It really had to track me down. And I came back, you know, my mother was in the room with me, and I came back, and, you know, I went unconscious for a bit. And I said, Mommy, I died, Mommy, I died. She said, No, you didn't. And So I always had that spiritual base behind me, even as a little kid. And then, you know, grew up in the 60s and did the whole drug thing, moved to the Haight-Ashbury looking for love and looking for love in all the wrong places. And in 1980, while I was going for my master's in counseling psychology, I heard that there was a man coming out from Connecticut who was going to teach a weekend workshop, and I could get two easy units if I signed up for this workshop. So the two easy units drew me in to meet up with Michael Harner, an anthropologist who teaches shamanic journeying. And it was through my shamanic journeys of learning how to go into that altered state of consciousness through the use of the drum to actually meet up with my own personal helping spirits. And yes, first I started with all those self-absorbed things, going to my power animal. How can I lose 5 pounds? But, you know, then my work kind of branched out into how do I help other people in the world? And I loved in Llewellyn's book, I was so struck by this, when he wrote in his book on spiritual power, how we've brought our materialism into the invisible realms, you know, because now for the first time we go to the spirits and say, how do I lose 5 pounds? You know, how do I get a car? You know, all those kinds of things. And that we've actually brought all of our material issues now into the invisible realms. So that was a very, that really woke me up when I read that part in his book. So I started working with healing of people and doing different shamanic methods for bringing through healing. But I also really love nature, and that's part of shamanism, is to remember that everything is alive. Everything that exists has a spirit. And I love, through shamanic journeys, but also being out in nature, communicating with trees and plants and the animals and feeling that connection. We're not here alone. Modern technology makes us think that we're separate from nature, but we're animals. We're part of nature. And I have a deep, deep love for nature, and I also have a BA in marine biology, and I have a love for rivers and real despair about how we've polluted rivers. And so I started to work through my journeys and also doing research to look at how do we use spiritual practices to actually shift the pollution that we see in the environment today. And I started to work with different principles between my journeys and the research that I did. What I was doing research on was I was trying to look at miracles from all different spiritual traditions around the world, and how did different mystics and spiritual healers create miracles. And what the words that started to form, it was like a formula started to come together of really needing to have an intention in your spiritual practices, what you're doing. And neuroscientists have actually found that it's when you state an intention, when you come up with an intention, your brain actually takes that as action has already taken place. So it interprets an intention as action. So action follows any intention. So intention is really key. As I said earlier, all spiritual traditions teach that love, only love heals. So we always have to come from our heart. And that's a real key in looking at miraculous healings and changing the dream, being a creative person in the world right now today. Union. And if you've read any of Llewellyn's work and are familiar with some of my work, we really talk about being in union with that spark of light, being in union with God, the universe, the creative forces of the universe, source, not seeing yourself as separate, but really experiencing yourself as part of the whole, but not as a separate being, because from that place, all that magic, all miracles are possible. And there are unlimited amounts of miraculous stories of mystics who have been able to do incredible miraculous healings, from Jesus to some of the Indian mystics and healers, to Taoism, you know, shamanism all around the world. But it comes from, can you drop that sense of separation and become part of source, to be source? And when you are source, then transformation comes from that place. Harmony within creates harmony without. That's an old alchemical principle. And some of you might have heard the story of, there's a story that talks about this principle of, it comes from a story in China. It's a Taoist story, and where a rainmaker is brought into a little village that's suffering a real drought. And the rainmaker comes into the village and says, give me a cottage outside of the community and just leave my meals at the door and don't come and make any contact with me. I'll come out when I'm ready. He comes out 3 days later. There's not a cloud in the sky. Starts pouring. Everybody runs up to him and says, oh, you're a great rainmaker. And he goes, I'm not a rainmaker. I can't make rain. He said, when I came into this village, I saw everybody was out of harmony. So I went outside and I found harmony inside of myself. When there's harmony, it rains when it's supposed to rain, and it doesn't rain when it's not supposed to rain. You can't make rain. So harmony within creates harmony without. And when you look at the weather changes happening on the planet, they're so extreme. It really mirrors that disharmonious state, you know, inside of ourselves. And then there's concentration. Concentration and focus are really tough for people in our culture because there's so many distractions. It's so hard to maintain our focus. It's so hard to maintain our concentration. And I wrote a book, Medicine for the Earth, where I talk about these principles, and I had left focus out of my, quote, formula. And I had a dream, and this spirit came to me in a dream after I sent the book off to Random House. And the spirit said, you left focus out of your formula. And I said, what? I put concentration in. He said, focus and concentration are two different things. Get the book back and re-put focus. I had to rewrite the whole book, putting focus back in. But, you know, he's really right, because concentration is concentration at the moment. Focus is like when you focus on a camera, what's your vision? Can you stay with your vision? And what I noticed when 9/11 happened was the first thing that happened in the spiritual community that I was around was people lost their focus. It was really hard to maintain that focus. When things are good, it's really easy to maintain your spiritual focus. When things get hard, that's when focus kind of falls apart. And then the last part of the formula is imagination. And that is such an important piece in our culture right now. Because when we talk about creating a new dream, if we cannot imagine a planet where we're living in harmony, in peace, abundance, equality for all, it is not going to happen. We have to be able to imagine. And again, because our imagination was squashed as children, because we were told, stop dreaming, get a real life, get a real job, you know, that's a hard thing for people to bring back. So, you know, it really is about really letting your imagination flow. But if you bring intention, love, union, harmony, concentration, focus, and imagination together, those are real key pieces in being to really work with the principle of creation. And so in my work, just to kind of finish up with what I actually tried out, because I wanted to see, did anything I wrote about in Medicine for the Earth work? With all my other books, first I did the work, and then I wrote the book. With Medicine for the Earth, I was guided to write the book first, and then we did experiments to see if anything worked. So I joined forces with a physicist and a couple of chemists, and we started to, I'll keep this, I'm going to give you the short version because I'm running out of time. But what we do is we actually take deionized water, which is water that has no minerals in it, so nothing will react to it. And we intentionally pollute it with ammonium hydroxide, which is a very common pollutant on the planet right now. And it's really easy to test the changes of that by testing the pH. So you don't have to send the water off to a lab to test the changes. And we've basically, what I've been doing in workshops is just doing what we just started with, getting people into a place of light, toning from that place, dropping what keeps us separate from all of life in the universe, experiencing that connection, coming from a place of love. And I actually tell people to forget that the water is in the middle of the room, because I don't want people praying over the water, trying to manipulate the water, because the key is the water is only reflecting back to us our toxic state of consciousness. If we can change our state of consciousness, will the water reflect that back? So we've been having some really wonderful results in showing how the pH does change afterwards. Again, not even focusing on the water, but you change inside of yourself, and the environment reflects that back. And in the German-speaking countries where I teach, pH meters and pH strips is not enough for them. We drink the water after the ceremonies. And that's always an interesting experience for me as a leader, because we really do take the water up to where it would kill anybody who drank it. So to pass the water around a circle of 60 people is always nerve-wracking for me. But I'm still here, and I've done it twice now. So what I'm trying to do is really give you some inspiration that it is possible, but we really do have to work on those toxic states of consciousness. And what does that mean? It means that minute to minute, as much as we can in our life, we have to look at what are we putting out into the world. We talk about oneness. We talk about beauty. We come to get together in spiritual groups together, but what do you do when you're stuck in traffic going over the Golden Gate Bridge or the Bay Bridge? What are you sending out there? And from a shamanic point of view, there's a difference between experiencing energy and sending energy, and we don't know the difference in that culture. So think of the words, I felt kicked when I was down. I felt like I was shot. I felt like I was held hostage in that group. I felt like I was backstabbed. These are actually things that happen. And we know that it's important as human beings. We are egoic beings. You know, we live in those different realities all at the same time. It's that paradox of there is no separation. We're one, and we're also these egoic beings that have emotions. I am a rage driver. I get upset and behind the wheel. But the difference is, do I send to the driver in front of me? So being able to say, I'm angry, I'm scared, I'm depressed, but to ask for that energy behind those emotions to be transmuted, transformed to light and love, so that's what goes out into the world. And so if you could do that, just one spiritual practice, because as a culture, we are sending. We are participating in what shamans we call sorcery, moment to moment, with our thoughts and what we send. So be able to work that, do that alchemy work, work it through. It is your right to have emotions. Work through that energy so what is going out into the world is love and light. What words do we use in our daily life and in our vocabulary? The Aramaic term that we all grew up with, abracadabra. Abrac ad habra is the Aramaic. I will create as I speak is the literal translation of abracadabra. Abrac ad habra. I will create as I speak. All traditions believe that words have a vibration, that vibration goes up into the universe and manifests down. What words do you use in your vocabulary throughout the day? What energies are raining back down on you in your life? If you think about just those two things and nothing else, you can kind of see where we are in the world right now. And because we don't know how to focus our imagination and our spiritual energies, we're creating a tremendous amount of chaos. So it really is up to all of us to really start to work with those energies that we're sending out, the words that we use in our vocabulary. And I need reminders. I'm a habitual person, and my life moves really fast, like all of yours. My house is plastered with words. Everywhere I turn, I remember that I need to shift how I'm working with my vocabulary and with my energy. I need reminders everywhere. I put up beautiful pictures to help me remember. I don't want to be sending this energy out. I have words of this is the type of energy I want manifesting down on my life. So, you know, if we can just work with these simple practices and then come together in groups like this, where we bring our energies together and our focus together in healing in behalf of all of life, I really do believe that that's how we move into creating a different dream that shamans talk about. And we have the power to do it. We absolutely, positively have the power to do it. And it really is important to remember that it's who we become that changes the world, not what we do, that our perception creates our reality. And so it's important for us to watch what we're projecting out into the world, that the spiritual practices we do create change, and to constantly keep going inside of yourself of looking at what brings meaning, passion, and joy back into your life. Joy is what heals the earth. Joy is what's going to heal the earth, is when we can remember the great gift and how lucky that we all are to be alive. So let's just take a moment in ending to give thanks for our lives. So just go inside and feel that preciousness of life. Think of a color that you love, a flower, a living being, a place, something that reminds you of that preciousness of life. And whatever you're seeing outside of yourself is also inside. And you are precious. You are light. You are love. And you do have the ability to create the world that we all want to live in, into being. And we're doing it right now. So hold that preciousness in your heart throughout the day. And hold the love of this community and this group that has gathered here throughout the day. And great change in the collective and in the world comes from that. So, thank you. So I think it's another break time or lunch time. Lunch! Enjoy your lunch and remember you're eating pure light. In the shamanic tradition, ancestors, it's always important to honor the ancestors. For one thing, the ancestors gave us life, and in shamanism, life is so precious. So being grateful to the ancestors for the life that they've given, also the teachings that are passed down from generation to generation. And I don't know any shamans who would not start a ceremony with honoring the ancestors. It would be seen as extremely disrespectful. And it's also believed that there are ancestors in what in shamanism we call the middle world, which is this world here. So before I came here this morning, I asked permission of the ancestors of this land if it's okay for me to come and be here and talk in this group. And I teach for a foundation called the Foundation for Shamanic Studies here. And years ago, the foundation brought a Uchi shaman from Siberia who was in his 90s to Westerbeck Ranch here in Sonoma. And Grandfather Duvon, he started studying shamanism when he was 17, and he was in his 90s when I met him. So, you know, he had quite a presence. And he spent days introducing himself to every tree. And and before every ceremony, he said in Uchi, we had translators, so we knew what he was saying in his ceremonies. But as he started every ceremony, he apologized to the ancestors of the land that he did not know their ways, and please not punish him for working in a different way that the California Indians did, because he was coming from a different land. He would say to the spirits, we heard this from the translator, he would say, they're making me do this. Please don't punish me. But, you know, to honor, you know, the ancestors, they lived here. They loved the land. And so here, you know, now in this time of travel, you have people from shamanic traditions traveling all over the place, coming to do ceremonies on land where for, you know, hundreds of years, these ancestors have been doing these ceremonies. So to walk in from an innocent place that they're not here, still protecting the land and working spiritually, is a real lack of respect. And I found a really long time ago in workshops, if I was finding a lot of obstacles, like weather to the point where it was becoming dangerous for people to be on the land, things that were becoming really big obstructions, if I would just stop the work and honor the ancestors and ask the ancestors for help, all the obstacles would disappear. So, you know, the thing about shamanism is a system of direct revelation. So when Llewellyn said, I don't like to answer questions, it's because from a shamanic tradition, you get your own answers. You don't ask somebody else for an answer. And so I didn't really have anybody teach me about how important it was to honor the ancestors where I was working. I found from experience and just bringing groups to different places that things went a lot better if I spoke to the ancestors and talked to them first. So there's just a real tradition of honoring the people who have lived on the land for a certain period of time, and that we're all working in partnership together, and to bring them in, invite them into the circle. It's important in all shamanic cultures. I can't think of any shamanic cultures that would not start off anything without honoring the ancestors first. We can journey to the heart of the world, and as we do that, embody our light. Okay?
Beautiful.
So those of you who know how to already work with the drum, you know what to do. For those of you who have never heard the drum, you can just let the drum carry you. The drum is seen to help the shaman alter his or her state of consciousness so that what we call the free soul can be freed from the container and the limitations of the ego and the physical body and can journey into the invisible realms. So those of you who have never done any journeying before, you want to set an intention to allow the drum to take you into the heart of the world and just see what happens. Sometimes in shamanism, less information is better. We let people have their own experience. So I'll drum for a few minutes, and when it's time to come back, because coming back is very important, okay? So, when it's time to come back, I'm going to change the drum beat. With intention during the very rapid beating, retrace your steps, come back into this room, embodying your light. So we're setting our intention as a group, as a collective, to journey into the heart of the world, to embody our light as we do that, which creates healing and beauty for all of life, and to come back as an embodiment of light. Okay, does that sound clear for people? Okay. So, close your eyes. You don't want to get too comfortable so you fall asleep. There is a difference between dreaming and journeying. Okay, so keep your intention clear. So feel your connection with the heart of the world and with the source of light. Know that you are the heart of the world and that you are a body of light. And with gratitude and thanks, just open up your eyes when you feel ready. Llewellyn was asking me at lunch, because we were talking a little bit about journeying and, you know, do you give instructions, do you guide people while you're doing this? And from a shamanic point of view, it really is about you and the spirits that you're meeting and talking to. And so, yes, there are basic instructions, which I didn't obviously have time to give, of directions and where to go and who to look for and how to see, feel, hear, taste, smell, everything that you experience in those invisible worlds so that you're really there. But once that drumbeat starts, it's between you and the spirits. And it's really just, it's in our culture, it's the understanding that the spiritual world is compassionate and really wants to help us, really wants to help us. And so where we surrender to the loving arms of the universe and know that the spirits will come through to give us the guidance and the healing that we'll need, not just for ourselves, but for the whole collective too. So,
as you're usually thanking the ancestors of the land, mm-hmm. can we do that together?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. To end. Yes, yes. So as we end this afternoon, we close our eyes, and first we start with giving thanks to the ancestors that have held us in love. The ancestors who have loved this earth and who have passed on spiritual practices and suffered in their own ways so that we might have life and we might be able to experience this beauty and this joy of living here on this earth. We give thanks to the ancestors of the land, and we say we too will carry on your traditions in whatever way that we can, so that harmony, peace, love, and light return to the planet again. And we give thanks to the spirit of the land here for holding us in love and creating this space that we may join our hearts and our light together with the understanding that there is no difference between any of us. We are light. We are love. We give thanks to the spirits who have joined us today, and we let them know that our work in this room only is done for now. Thank you.